Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And a good Thursday evening to you. I'm Michael Cohen, producer Andre Holgate. Thanks for joining us here on 1320 WILS. The New York Times recently featuring 32 new innovations, including electric clothing. But history shows us that it can take decades for amazing inventions to catch fire. Why is that? And what is the next giant leap for mankind? We'll talk about that. And worker productivity, it's been the focus of businesses in the country for many years now. But even with all the new ways managers have to squeeze as much work as possible out of their employees, there are still factors that get in their way, including boredom at work. We'll find out more later. But first, what does this week's recall vote in Wisconsin say about the public's view on unions? And what kind of changes could it lead to here in Michigan as the battle over becoming a right-to-work state is set to get ratcheted up? To talk about that and to talk, find out where we go from here, I'm joined by Vincent Vernuccio, Labor Policy Counsel for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's formerly served as an official in the U.S. Department of Labor, where he was a special assistant to the Assistant Secretary for Administration and Management under President George W. Bush. Vincent, thank you for joining us on 1320 WILS.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
So the Competitive Enterprise Institute is a nonprofit public policy organization dedicated to advancing the principles of limited government, free enterprise, and individual liberty. Is it fair to say that your view and the view of the Institute is that unionized public workers really should not exist?
Well, I agree with Franklin Roosevelt and George Meany, one of the longest-serving and first heads of the AFL and then the AFL-CIO, that you cannot collectively bargain with the government. Now, in the private sector, everyone has the right to associate with whoever they wish, to join or not join a union. Now, no one should be forced to join a union, but they do have that right to associate if they so choose. The government sector, on the other hand, the public sector, it's a little bit different. Because remember, there's no profit motive in the government. You're not going to, a state government isn't going to get up, let's say, from Michigan and go down to Texas. It can't. It's trapped by geography and by the political climate there. So what these government unions do is there's this vicious circle where they know they have a monopoly. So they charge dues money and force dues money from government workers. Then they turn around then and give that dues money to politicians. The politicians get elected.
Sure, no,
the politicians then give the favors back to the unions, so the unions get more dues, which gives it right back to the politicians, and the cycle goes over and over. And at the end of the day, it's you and me, the taxpayer, who's stuck footing the bill.
So do you think what Governor Walker, now that he's won his recall vote here, do you think that he will, that this action will catch fire and we'll see this happening in other states?
Absolutely. What state governors and state legislators around the country have seen is that if they take on the special interest, like Governor Walker did, that they're going to have to endure a lot of pain, a lot of noise. But at the end of the day, they will change their state for the better, and they will go down in the history books as protecting taxpayers and protecting future generations.
But tell me, why do you think, though, Governor Walker continues to insist that he does not want to pursue making Wisconsin a right-to-work state, just like Governor Snyder is saying that here in Michigan? Do you believe that that is really not their long-term goal, for Republican state leaders nationwide?
You know, there's a really big difference between the private sector, which is really what right-to-work is about, and the government sector. We just talked about the stranglehold that the government sector, unions has on taxpayers. I mean, right to work is a bit of a different animal. Now, I hope that both Governor Snyder and Governor Walker will eventually be like Governor Daniels in Indiana, and after he's climbed some of the political hurdles, see that the best thing for the state is giving workers the right to say no to a union, giving workers the right to choose. So while I hope this is going to happen within the next few years, I'm not sure exactly which way it's going to go. I mean, I think right now, the way the political forces, the winds have to push them in one way or the other. And definitely, after the election earlier this week, I think they probably are pushing more towards right to work.
But before we get to the underlying economic arguments for right to work, which some say are not very strong, many say, at least critics say, that the real motive is political, that ultimately what it means, while the long-term effect on the union is, you know, it can take a long time for that to occur, it means for the Democratic Party, the funding that that comes from the unions can be dramatically reduced very quickly under right to work. Is the political factor not a huge one in this effort?
I mean, there is a political factor there, but the better question is, what kind of funding is that if, like happened in Wisconsin, half of the second largest government employees unions, union members chose to opt out of their union? If there is that strong political will, the Democrats would still be getting money from individual workers. What you're talking about is forced dues money being funneled to one candidate or the other. And I mean, I bet you would, I'm sure you would agree that, you know, we have the freedom of speech, but that freedom of speech should not be forced.
But ultimately, this is going to change the political landscape dramatically. I mean, you're going to have a Democratic Party in any state that becomes right to work very much weakened, and Republicans and their massive corporate backings will be able to have really full control, will they not?
Well, long-term, probably not. Long-term, what will probably happen is the Democrats will realize that they can't be the constant apologist for the government employee unions, or they can't rely on the money that they get from them by just giving them favor after favor after favor at the taxpayer's expense, and the taxpayers are going to say it up. So you're going to probably see a change, and this may not happen overnight, and this probably won't happen for several years, but eventually you'll start to see a change within the Democratic Party of, hey, we have to start putting taxpayers above the special interest.
I'm talking to Vincent Vernuccio, Labor Policy Counsel for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. So are you familiar with this effort here in Michigan to put a constitutional amendment to protect collective bargaining rights?
I am. And basically what that constitution, the UAW and some of the other government unions there are really pushing that. And that's more aimed at undoing the reforms that have already been put in place, like paycheck protection, like allowing government union workers to opt out of the political portion of their dues, like we were just talking about, forced speech, as opposed to anything else. And, you know, especially with the overwhelming victory in Wisconsin, I think they're going to have a very, very uphill climb.
I see. No, well, they certainly appear to have the signatures necessary. Then it's just a matter of getting it on the ballot. I mean, is there, on the face of it, is there anything unconstitutional about this kind of approach?
Well, I mean, they're thinking of amending the Constitution, so
right.
So you can't really say amendment to the Constitution.
But in terms of pursuing a constitutional amendment that kind of, from what I understand, will guarantee that collective bargaining rights will not be mitigated, and in fact will nullify any effort to make Michigan a right-to-work state.
Well, you see, the right-to-work argument, as far as the amendment goes, that's really ancillary. The people pushing this constitutional amendment are trying to trump that up as the main issue. But the main issue is everything that Governor Snyder and both the Assembly and the Senate have done to curb some of the excess of the government union privileges. So that's really what's at the heart of this. And now, remember, I mean, this will change all the government union perks that have been going on, that have been reformed for the last couple of years. This will not affect right to work at all, one way or the other, in the immediate term. So it's really on the government level, more than the private sector level, that has the biggest impact by this amendment if it were to go through.
So when you look at the entire right to work effort, I mean, is it not ultimately the end game, even if it doesn't happen immediately, that it will weaken unions, they won't have the power to negotiate such as they have now, and certainly when you make dues kind of a voluntary thing, you won't have the cohesiveness of any union to be able to stand up against management?
Actually, it's exactly the opposite of weakening unions. I would argue that right to work actually makes unions stronger, because now the union doesn't have a monopoly. They have to be more responsive to their members because they have to serve a constituency, or that constituency will just say, like, forget it, I'm done paying you. Now, in the near term, what it'll do is the ineffective unions, the unions that aren't serving their members, that aren't serving their workers, they may weaken them, yes, but what will probably happen is those unions will have to wake up and say, what could we do to make it worthwhile for someone to actually pay us? So in that sense, eventually it'll actually make the unions stronger because they'll have to be more responsive.
When it comes to the economic factors, though, I mean, there are those who look at states like Montana, Colorado, New Mexico. They border right-to-work states, yet they all have maintained strong economies. Is there really any clear evidence that becoming a right to work really has any dramatic impact beneficially to a state economy?
Absolutely. I mean, there, you know, state by state, there is a lot of clear evidence that the right to work states are doing better. And you're looking at some of the things in the Sun Belt in the South. But more telling are county by county comparisons, where you have one county on the border of a state that's right to work, and the other county is on the border and it's on the forced unionism state. The county on the right-to-work state does substantially better. And there's literature out there that I'd urge your listeners to go out and read it. Actually, a lot of it's on our labor website, workplacechoice.org, that CEI houses, that could really be instructive of, you know, the county-by-county breakdown. So you're talking about really the same population, the same geographical area, and the only difference is one state is right to work, and one state is forced unionism.
Okay, just a minute left. But on a scale of 1 to 10, how certain are you that Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin will all become right to work states in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years?
5 to 10 years? I'd probably say a 5 or a 6. It really depends on the political climate. It depends on what kind of people get elected into office and if those people are serving the special interest or if they're serving the workers. And if they're actually serving the workers and they want to give workers the right to say no, they will pass right to work.
I see. But ultimately, even now with the Republicans in full control in Michigan, Wisconsin, you don't think they're going to be pursuing this in any aggressive manner anytime soon?
I think especially in Michigan, the Republicans are going to be very concerned with that UAW, with that government union constitutional amendment that's going to try to undo many of the reforms that they've been pushing. Actually, the Mackinac Center has did some great research on this, and they found that the amendment would really only affect about 3%, give or take, of the population. Yet they're spending millions and millions of dollars to get this on the ballot because it helps a lot of special interests politically, while the rest of us are basically going to be stuck footing the bill.
Vincent Vernuccio, Labor Policy Counsel for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Vincent, thank you very much for joining us on WILS.
Hey, Michael, thank you for having me on.
Excellent. When we come back, we'll be joined by Carla Swift, president of AFL-CIO Michigan, to get her view on what happened in Wisconsin, get her some of her responses here. That is next. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.